Chapter 11. Pain drags Cody into consciousness, full of teeth. For an instant, his brain doesn't want to work. The world grays out as he opens his eyes, slips towards black, and the ache pulled tight around his bones redoubles sharply enough to make his vision spin. He groans, tries to turn his head, and finds twisted metal in his way, digging into his cheek. That's startling enough to make him focus, and it takes a moment, but the world swims back into something clear. The silence hits him first. There's an eerie hush to everything, a heavy quiet that feels like eyes in the darkness, something waiting to spring. The air is hot and thick, so humid it feels like breathing soup, and it's dim, dim like twilight on the very edge of nightfall, and a flash of lightning scatters brilliance over them, and the warped remains of the ship become clear for half an instant. They crashed, Cody thinks, thoughts connecting, and with a groan he pushes himself up as best he can, shoving at the debris covering him. Another flare of lightning illuminates the crash site, and it's enough for Cody to see the shape of the thing pinning him, a section of the interior roofing, scorched like it met atmosphere. That was one hell of a drop, and a hell of an impact. Cody's honestly surprised they're not all paced on the ground right now, honestly. With a crash, the sheeting spills sideways, and Cody drags himself to his feet with a wince, looking for any other survivors. Wants to panic, but won't let himself. The only thing to focus on is getting to whomever needs help, then finding a way off this planet. Wherever it happens to be. Commander, a relieved voice says, and a moment later, a body is under Cody's arm, familiar and steady. Kix helps him stagger over a section of swampy ground, away from the worst of the wreckage, and lowers him down to slump against the wide, smooth trunk of a tree. Instantly, the medic drops to one knee, tilting Cody's head to the side to check his skull with careful hands. Sir, are you all right? Anything broken? Our ship? Cody says dryly, but pushes his hands away a moment later. I'm fine, just sore. You okay? Kix's expression twists. I've got a bruise or two, that's all. General Windu protected me, I think. With the Force. Mace, Cody thinks, and immediately struggles towards his feet. Mace and Anakin are both somewhere in the wreck, and he needs to find them, help them. Easy, Commander, Kix says, and catches him, pushing him back down. I've been awake since we hit. I already found them. He points to Cody's left, to a mostly clear patch of ground, where Fives, Anakin, and Mace are all laid out. Cody looks them over quickly, and Anakin's got some severe bruising, and there's a gash in Mace's head that's been covered with Bacta, while Fives has a lump on his skull that Cody can see from here. But they're all breathing, and they've all been taken care of. Mace protected their medic first and foremost. It's a perfectly logical thing to do, but Cody remembers that awful spinning fall, the speed of it, and in those handful of moments, Mace saw they were crashing, worked out who was most valuable in that instant, and acted. Heck, he mutters, dropping his head back against the trunk. Kix snorts. You can say that again, he agrees, turning to look back at the crash. Pauses, and then says, It should have killed all of us, but the impact barely even left a crater. The Force, maybe? Cody says, which is complete guesswork, but feels right. If Mace was quick enough to keep Kix from getting more than a couple of bumps, he was probably quick enough to cushion their landing somehow, too. Or Anakin was. Cody's seen his general jump off high enough things and land on his feet without so much as a wince to know Jedi have some sort of technique for that. Kix's smile is wry. That's what I thought, too. He sits back on his heels, raising his head, and says, Maybe the Force can tell us where we are. Cody looks up, too, and he has to swallow at the sight of the blanket of black clouds blocking the sun. the flickers of pale lightning that are continuous enough to act as light for the world below. Thunder rumbles, a dark, distant counterpoint that spreads and then falls silent again. But beyond that, Cody can't hear anything. "Not a planet I know," he says, on the edge of Grimm, and wonders what the likelihood of the place being inhabited is. Not great if there aren't already people here. The galaxy's got a lot of uninhabited backwaters, though, and if their aborted jump to hyperspace dropped them on one of those, getting off is going to be a trial and a half, especially with the ship reduced to a pile of scrap and not much else. "Maybe one of the generals will know it," Kix says, determinedly optimistic, and drags his medkit closer to fish out painkillers. "Take them, or you're going to be too sore to move," he says, and then drops them in Cody's hand. Cody grimaces, but swallows them down, then gets to his feet. When Kix makes to protest, frowning, Cody raises a hand. "We need to get as many supplies out of that wreck as possible," he says. "I don't know this planet, but it's a jungle, and that means it's probably going to rain at some point, and we should have weapons handy. There's no telling what's out there." Kix doesn't look happy about it, but he rises to his feet as well, shouldering his kit again. "I haven't seen anything," he says. "If there's wildlife out there, the crash might have scared them away." "Hopefully," Cody mutters, because he is in no mood to deal with hungry fauna right now. Carefully, he picks his way back down into the shallow crater, looking for any familiar sections of ship. There are a few, but nothing immediately useful, and Cody sets aside promising-looking pieces of tech he unearths and keeps moving. Kix matches him, helping him shift the larger pieces out of the way, and they clear a path back towards the remains of the cabin. It's on its side, torn like someone tried to rip it in two, with a lot of the plating gone and a piece of metal driven through one wall like a spear. There's blood on it. Just a smear, but this must be where Mace hit his head, Cody realizes, and feels it twist like unease in his chest. A few inches in the wrong direction, and it could have killed him. It's several feet from there that Cody finds his lightsaber, gold and electrum bright, even in the tangle of twisted metal. Instinct has Cody picking it up and clipping it to his own belt before he can outthink the move, and when he realizes, he pushes the thought down and keeps going. Mace isn't Obi-Wan, hasn't allowed Cody to touch his lightsaber, and Cody knows that for Jedi, lightsabers are as important as names to clones, but it will be fine, hopefully. "Sir," Kix calls, and Cody turns in time to catch his blaster rifle as Kix tosses it over. Just having it in his grasp again is a relief. Cody runs a quick check over the various pieces, then brings it up, testing the sight, lowers it, letting out a pleased breath, and nods his thanks to Kix. "Any more where that came from?" he asks, heading over to help shift the tangle of smashed seats. "Mine," Kix says, and pulls it from underneath a piece of buckled deck plating. Grimaces at the battered casing, but does his own check and then slings it across his back. "If this is where the wall was, and nothing got thrown around too much, supplies should be somewhere along here." Cody doesn't bother pointing out that it's not a Republic ship, but a Separatist one, and Grievous definitely doesn't need supplies beyond a battery or two. Kix probably knows that already, but better to look than just give up. He follows the edge of the deck, looking for the emergency supply hatch, and finds it twisted open, contents scattered across the dirt outside. "Better than nothing," he says, and Kix nods, relief clear. "I don't think I'm ready to trust anything in this jungle as far as food goes," he says. "When I woke up, the mushrooms were glowing." Cody snorts quietly. "General Kenobi already proved to me that eating weird mushrooms was a bad idea," he says. "By doing it?" Kix asks, caught between horror and amusement. "How else?" Cody asks dryly. "He's just like Skywalker, but he hides it better." "Looks like the commander's going that route too," Kix agrees. and slides the last of the ration bars into his kit. Cody has the other half of them. Putting all their supplies in one place seems like a bad idea. Tano? Yeah, she had a streak of that in her already. And General Skywalker's making it worse. Straightening up, Cody looks around them, into the thick jungle, and frowns. Was it darker earlier? Kix nods. By a lot. The only light was the lightning and the mushrooms. He pulls a face, rubbing at the bruise curving over his cheekbone, and says, I have no idea how long a rotation is here, but it's about as light as I've seen it right now. Meaning they're going to be headed towards night eventually, and Cody doesn't like the idea of it getting darker. It's already dim enough that the thought of no light at all, plus the cover of the trees and the clouds, makes the back of Cody's neck itch. Anything could be lurking in the jungle, from seppies to native monsters. If there are sentient natives, there's no guarantee they're friendly either. Before he can say as much, though, some medic sense has Kix spinning on his heel. In an instant, he's back across the newly formed clearing, dropping to his knees as Mace stirs. Hold still, General Windu, he says quickly. You hit your head when we landed.
Landed, Mace repeats,
and opens his eyes as Cody makes his way closer.
That's a generous interpretation.
Cody snorts before he can help himself, crouching down on Mace's other side so he's not looming over him.
Could have said set down if it would make you feel better, he says.
Wonders, belatedly, if he should add sir. But the way Mace's gaze flicks to him is steady, unoffended, and Cody breathes through the urge to apologize. Mace's eyes slide closed, and he winces faintly, then carefully pushes up onto his elbow. Kix hovers worriedly, but when Mace doesn't seem to have any trouble with that, Kix lets him ease the rest of the way up to sitting without protesting.
I should have expected this, Mace says,
and Cody frowns. Before he can object, though, Mace adds,
Skywalker's odds of crashing a ship are the highest in the order.
Swallowing a laugh, Cody sinks back on his heels. Probably the highest in the Gar, too, he says. Everything in one piece? Mace inclines his head, then carefully puts a hand up to feel the edges of the Bacta on his shaved skull.
You are both all right?
Thanks to you, sir, Kix says quietly. Thank you.
Having you in one piece meant the rest of us would end up that way.
Mace glances over at Fives and Anakin, and then asks,
They're...
Fine, Kix confirms. Mostly. Fives' head got a bit rattled inside his helmet, and General Skywalker got thrown clear and into a tree, but there's nothing broken that I couldn't fix.
For a crash landing without any power, we didn't hit too hard, Cody says,
and Mace looks at him, raising a brow.
Too much momentum, even a Jedi can't deal with, Mace says,
and pushes up to his feet. Cody rises with him, ready to grab his arm if he's unsteady, but he doesn't so much as waver.
But I could at least slow us down before we hit.
It's appreciated, Cody says dryly, and ignores the odd look Kix gives him. Any idea where we hit, though? Mace's gaze sweeps over the ripped-up trees from their landing, the dark jungle beyond, then rises. For a long moment, he takes in the near-constant lightning above them, the darkness of the clouds, and he frowns.
No, he says at last. Not immediately.
Cody supposes that even a Jedi can't know all of the Republic's million and change planets by sight, assuming they're still in the Republic. He's trying not to think about what will happen if they're not. The unknown regions are vast, and there's nothing to say that a hyperdrive malfunction couldn't have dumped them there, especially with how close they were to the edge of the Outer Rim. Deliberately, Cody takes a breath, setting those thoughts aside. They're not helpful right now. I'm not much of a mechanic, but I pulled together some scraps that might have come from the communications array. General Skywalker might be able to do something with them when he wakes up. Mace inclines his head.
he's a skilled engineer, he says, which doesn't quite manage to hide the undertone of, I would very much like to strangle him, that sneaks in. Cody muffles a laugh with a cough, and when he lifts his head, Mace just raises an eyebrow at him without commenting. Want us to scout the area? He asks, rather than try to explain himself. Glances at Kix, who's moved on to checking Anakin again, and amends. I can scout. There might be a trail or a road close by, or a settlement. I can at least do that much, Mace says, and sinks back down to the ground on his knees, resting his hands on his thighs. There are no mines in our immediate vicinity except animals, but I might be able to reach someone. Cody hesitates, but... It was the nebula interfering earlier? He asks. He hadn't thought the Force could function like a comm transmission, but if the energy of the nebula can disrupt it... Not the caldera, Mace says, eyes closed. Not directly, but the worlds beyond it were once the center of the Sith Empire, and the darkness lingers there. Something cold threads down Cody's spine, sharp contrast to the humid air. Sith, a whole empire of Sith. Clearly it's no longer in existence, but... The thought of it alone is enough to make Cody unsettled. How many planets were part of that empire? How great are the odds that their hyperspace jump didn't carry them more than a short distance, dropping them right in hostile space? Probably good, Cody thinks, resigned. He's getting used to Jedi luck at this point, but ending up crashing face first into the most dangerous things in the galaxy is never pleasant when it's happening. He wants to ask more about the Sith Empire, the caldera, whatever darkness was blocking Mace before. But just like the other night, Mace's breaths are evening out, his expression smoothing into quiet ease. Cody watches for another moment, then steels himself and steps away, sweeping the area carefully. Mace will probably notice any threats before he can, but he couldn't reach Obi-Wan before. What if that same Force interferes now, keeping him from seeing a danger before it's right on top of them? Cody's hands itch for his blaster, but he contains the urge and leaves it slung over his shoulder. There's no movement in the jungle, nothing to jump at just yet, and he can contain his twitchiness until he's given a reason not to. Instead of dwelling, he heads for Kix, who's applying more Bacta to Anakin's face. The bruises and long burn are already starting to fade, and Anakin's expression is set into a deeper frown than it was a moment ago. Like he's uncomfortable. Hopefully he'll wake up soon, Cody thinks. Two Jedi would probably help solve this problem, even if it's Anakin disobeying orders that got them into it. Not that Cody's surprised about that. He's served alongside the 501st enough, and heard enough of Rex's horror stories to know that Anakin tends to take orders as suggestions when he thinks he's right, which is most of the time in Cody's experience. In Obi-Wan's, too, judging by all the exasperation that gets aimed at Anakin after missions. Any idea when they'll wake up? Kix doesn't look up from his work. It's hard to tell with head wounds sometimes, but hopefully soon. Anakin's already showing some response, and Fives tried to smack me when I was putting Bacta on his head, so they're coming around. Good, Cody says on a breath, then rises to his feet again and turns, disquiet itching at him. Or maybe that's just the silence. The hush is still heavy, pervasive. Cody's used to cruisers or battlefields, and the absence of other sounds here is eerie. I didn't see any spaceports as we were coming down, Kix says after a moment, and his voice is faintly tense but controlled. Or lights. Maybe we're just on the wrong side of the planet or something, or I missed it, but... But if the planet's uninhabited, there's little chance they'll be able to comm for help. And if Mace can't reach someone through the Force, they won't be able to call for rescue that way either. Cody doesn't answer for a long moment, weighing his responses, and then says, General Skywalker's good at piecing together weirder things than a comm unit from scrap. Kick smiles, just a little. That's true, he says, more easily, and Cody snorts. We just have to keep the generals from strangling each other, and we should be fine, he says, not bothering to lower his voice. Kix flashes him a horrified look, but from behind him there's a snort. A pebble very clearly levitates itself up to Cody's eye level, sways there like a threat, and then drops back to the ground. That could have been your skull it hit, Mace says, unimpressed, and Cody very carefully doesn't smirk. It's a pebble, he points out. I could put that pebble through the trunk of a tree. Cody pauses, considering that, and then gives in. Maybe save that for the first thing that tries to eat us? You seem very sure that something will, Mace says, and when Cody turns, he's watching Cody closely, expression on the edge of unreadable. Cody gives him a crooked smile. You are sure something won't? Something rueful slides over Mace's features, and he concedes that with the tip of his head. Eyes open, he says dryly, and sinks back into meditation. Great! Cody sweeps another careful look over the jungle and tries to judge whether or not it's getting darker. Wonders, too, when the lightning overhead is going to give way to rain, or if it will at all. Hell, he wasn't exactly expecting their recapture of Ord Radama to go smoothly, but he didn't sign up for chasing Grievous into a Sith nebula and getting stranded on a creepy jungle planet either. Just once, it would be nice if things didn't immediately swing to the worst possible outcome every time there's a plan involved. The Force here feels wrong. Mace's unease is a heavy thing. Large and sharp like alarm, even if there's no immediate threat. He tries to breathe through it, to filter it out and release the clouding edge of emotion into the Force around him, but releasing emotion requires understanding it, and Mace can't understand this. Anakin is having unquiet dreams, and they curl along the edges of Mace's senses, like vines full of stinging thorns. With a flicker of annoyance aimed inward, Mace shuts out the edges of other thoughts, focuses. Less meditation than simply a routine to quiet his thoughts. The pattern of breaths comes naturally, settles him. The mental muscle memory is simple to fall back on, and Mace lets his senses spread out. A long, slow seep across the planet's surface. It still doesn't feel right. Like it's braced, twisted, and the vibrations of it wash, coarse and unsettling across Mace's skin. A metal against metal screech inaudible to the physical ear. Mace tries to press through it, to relax more, to ease into the nexus of it, but the Force here is a discordant note, and it's overwhelming the melody beyond it. Grimly, deftly, Mace keeps looking regardless. He sweeps the jungle, catching the simple instinct emotion flicker of animal minds, the set, aged weight of old paths where sentience once walked, notes them, moves on. But if there are other minds close to their crash site, Mace can't sense so much as a trace of them. Finally, displeased, Mace opens his eyes, letting the tangle of uprooted trees and twisted metal fade back into reality around him. It's darker than it was, and there's a faint glow from further into the trees, low and luminous and ghostly, some sort of bioluminescent flora, he decides after a moment. Setting it aside as something to keep an eye on that isn't immediately threatening, Cody is sorting through the wreckage, and Kix is sitting cross-legged beside Anakin, frowning down at his scanner. He's all right, Mace says quietly, making the medic twitch hard, head snapping towards Mace like he's braced for a threat. Mace gives him a second to recover, to see that there isn't one, and then says, he's dreaming, but he'll wake soon. Kix pauses for a moment, then nods and puts the scanner aside. "Thanks, sir," he says. "I keep looking for something I must have missed. Fives has a concussion, but General Skywalker should be fine." Mace weighs how to answer that, debates his words. Then, careful, he says, "The Force is unsettled here, and Anakin has a deep connection to it. I would assume that's why he's still not conscious." Kix's face screws up, and Mace can feel the disparaging comment he wants to make. Amused, he raises an eyebrow at him, and Kix lets out an aggrieved sigh. "I can't fix the Force," he says after a moment. "No," Mace agrees, and tries to keep his humor in check. "Anakin will work it out for himself eventually." Glancing over at the clone trooper on the ground, he pauses, and then says, "Fives is waking." Kix blinks, then turns immediately to Fives, putting a hand on his shoulder and reaching for his medkit. "Stay down, Vod," he says, even as Fives groans. "You hit your head when the ship wrecked. Just stay still for a minute."
"Do you have to talk so much?" Fives complains groggily, putting a hand to his head with a grimace.
Kix pulls it back down, tipping Fives' head up to check his pupils. "Yeah," Kix says, unimpressed. "You only hear about a tenth of what I say anyway." Fives rolls his eyes, then winces.
"We crashed?"
he asks, sitting up and ignoring Kix's exasperated sigh.
"Spectacularly," Mace says dryly.
He looks Fives over for a moment, something he can't quite identify tugging at the edges of his mind, but focusing on the sensation doesn't yield any answers. Setting it aside, he says,
"I don't know the planet, but we all seem to be intact."
"Even if the ship isn't," Cody says, approaching with a handful of slightly scorched pieces of equipment and an extra blaster. He passes the blaster to Fives, who looks it over quickly, then slings its strap over his shoulder in an automatic motion. Trained from their first moment of awareness to be soldiers, Mace thinks, and closes his eyes for a long second. He's never forgotten why he and Cody are doing this, but the reminder is always stark in his chest when he pays attention.
"There's no trace of native sentience close by," he says, and Cody frowns. "There is a road to the north, however."
That doesn't make Cody look all that much happier. Before he can say anything, though, Fives offers, "Roads mean people, right? Maybe we can bum a ride back to the front."
"Assuming they have space-worthy ships," Cody says grimly.
"And," Mace adds quietly, "assuming that this isn't a deserted planet."
Cody's gaze flickers back to him, and he pauses for a moment, then asks,
"You think we're still inside the caldera?"
Mace sorts through his potential responses, seeking one that won't alarm without reason.
"According to legend," he finally settles on, "it was much harder to get out of the Empire than into it. The fact that we were only in hyperspace for a few moments makes me think the breakwater of the nebula stopped us before we could escape."
"And sent us off course," Cody concludes, and rubs a hand over the side of his face.
Mace can see that he understands the implications. Even if they can get off the planet, they won't be able to jump into hyperspace and get out of Sith space so easily. Instead, they'll have to navigate the nebula itself and hope their ship doesn't break up from the force of it.
"Criff," Five mutters, and ducks his head, hiding his face.
"Is this how all the general's plans tend to go?"
"Welcome to the 501st, Kix says, clapping him lightly on the shoulder. "Glad to have you, Vod."
"If we are within the borders of the old Empire," Mace says,
unwilling to leave the air so heavy,
"we'll almost certainly be able to find transmission equipment, though it may need a boost to get past the caldera."
Cody nods, breathing out.
"Better than hitting a planet without anything,"
he says. Besides, it's not like General Kenobi and General Sakura don't know where we went. They'll be working things from their end, too. That, at least, makes Fives lift his head. And we have two Jedi, he says, and gives Mace a grin. I have to say I like those odds, sir. He's still all but a shiny, the markings on his armor fresh, the plastoid itself almost entirely bright white. Mace feels a flicker of something that's almost like what rose when he met Depa in the crash, after years apart. Felt her desperate hope that he'd choose her to be his Padawan. It's startling. He's fond of all the clones who serve with the Jedi, but this is something different. A push, almost. But the Force here is so strange and off that Mace can't tell what it's meant to tell him. Deliberately, Mace folds the emotion away to consider more closely later, and says, "You and your brothers add to those odds as well, Fives." Fives' grin brightens, and Cody snorts softly. "Don't let it go to your head," he warns, thumping Fives lightly on the shoulder. He's talking about kicks. "He said, and," Fives protested, ducking away. "That was definitely an and." Mace contains a flicker of humor, looking down as he feels the first curl of awareness touch his mind. "Anakin," he says. Anakin makes a face he should probably be too old for, opening his eyes. "I feel like someone dunked me in Bacta and then didn't wash me off," he complains. "You're welcome, sir," Kix says dryly. "Ugh," Anakin mutters, but he sits up carefully, looking around. The wince when he takes in the wreckage of the ship is almost enough to make Mace feel better all on its own. "Jumping to hyperspace didn't work then?" "Not quite," Mace allows. "I believe the nebula deflected us before we could make it out." "It felt like that hyperdrive cracked halfway through," Anakin says, agreement more than argument. He looks over Kix, then Fives, then Cody, and sighs, slumping over his raised knees. "Criff, we lost Grievous." "That's the least of our problems at the moment," Mace says, and it's only long practice being diplomatic that keeps his voice from shading towards sharp. Cody, Fives, and Kix don't need to see one general reprimanding another, though. Not when everything is already so grim. "There's a road to the north, but I don't believe we should split our forces." Anakin opens his mouth like he's about to argue, then pauses, frowns, lifting his head, and his eyes slide out of focus for a moment. "Do you feel that?" he asks abruptly. "It's twisted," Mace finishes. Anakin's mouth tightens and he curls his hands into fists like he's going to start swinging at empty air. "It reeks," he says. "I mean, mentally, not like an actual smell." Mace doesn't roll his eyes, which he privately thinks is an admirable show of self-restraint. "It's unpleasant," he agrees and rises to his feet. "We should move soon. The cycle is ending, but we can reach the road if we go quickly." "I'll rig up a locator beacon," Anakin says and follows him up. "If Obi-Wan manages to get through, he needs to be able to find us." Outright alarm prickles like claws across Mace's skin, and he says, "No," before he can even think about it. Pauses, assessing the instinctive refusal, and then says more carefully, "Obi-Wan isn't the only one who could find a beacon." Anakin meets his gaze, startled, but Mace doesn't waver. And after a long moment, Anakin nods. "I don't feel anyone near us," he says, but it's not a reassurance. "No," Mace allows, "but roads usually lead somewhere." "Nowhere good here," Anakin says, so certain that it feels like the absolute truth. Mace doesn't even try to argue.